Leah Esther.
Good afternoon. You're a little bit early, and we'll wait for another person to come online or come into the class today.
Okay.
You doing all right?
Oh, yeah. Hashem, I'm blessed.
Baruch Hashem.
It's getting better and better.
Anna.
Good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon.
We're going to start in a minute or so.
Okay, I'll go ahead and mute.
Okay. Please join me in saying the Anna Bakoa. Anna Bakoa, Kedila Cheminka, Tati, Serra, Alphabet Gimel, Yutah Sadi. Kabel Rinat Amchasad Beninu Taharenu Nohra Kufre Shayan Sintet Nun Nagibor Dor Sheud Fa Kevava Shalom Reim Nun Gimel Dalet Yud Kaf Shin Barhem Tacharem Rakame Sitkatcha Dami Gam Reim Betetrum Saditap Gimel Chasin Kadosh Spiruha Nael Adata. Keptufet Tetnunayan Yahid Geye Lam Chapene Zogre Kedushata. Good Malamed, a Zion Ku. Shavatenu Kabel, Ushbandia Katenu, Yomodea, Tamlu, Bo, Shinkufav, Tadiyuta. We have brought the energy of creation into our space. Now we're going to separate the right column energy from the left column energy. And we're going to do this utilizing the 13 attributes of mercy. Adonai Yohei Wahei. Adonai Yohei Wahei. El Rachum Vechanun. Erech Apaim. Verav Chesed Ve'emet. No tehesed la lafim, no se awon vafesha, vechata avinake. The sources that connect us to the various years and the energy of those years. The only one we're going to do today is the this year of the year of the goat, and we're only going to utilize the first letters of the five words and make up that verse from Lamentations chapter 3 verse 52. The three words that we're able to parse the five first letters into is Tzatz Ki Ach, which translates as as appear like brothers. And this is definitely part of the energy for this year of the goat, the year of the wake up. And the eighth verse of the Anabakoth, we say in a whisper. But I'm going to read a verse from the Zohar, from the Parashah of Noah. I'm going to read from section 16, verse 126. And I'll start with the L'shem Yehud, which will apply to our study as well. L'shem Yehud kutcha berichu ishkin te bichilu urchimu urchilu urchilu urchimu. L'yakta Hashem yudhe bevadhe v'yehuda shalim b'shem kol Yisrael. Limud Torah mitzvah. La'asot Torah mitzvah. Vayehino amadunai Elohinu aleinu maasei adeinu kananei aleinu maasei adeinu kananehu. Kad maher machashava velayit yotha miman denaher kidein itlabesh viastim goy bina venaher leman maher. V'ayel da b'da ad itkalilu kol ho tachadam. When unknown thought shines from its source, namely from the mind, the moach of air, it is enclosed and covered by bina. It shines upon whom she shines, and they enter each other until they are as one. Are there any questions about the Zohar verse or any other subject? Today's class is on Zibug da Haka'ah, the unity of opposites, the binding by striking. The most effective tool we have in dealing with personal relationships. The handout can be found on the Revealed Wisdom Matrix, row 5. The left-hand column, it's basic class number 5. We're not going to be reading from the handout today, but we're going to start and follow pretty much the pattern of the handout. So the question is, we've learned about the Hebrew letters. We've learned why the world was created. We've learned about the Zohar and the 72 names of God and the Anabakoach. But what is the purpose of all of these things for us to learn? Are we supposed to learn it intellectually? And we know that's not the answer. This is not an intellectual study. It's an experiential study. And binding by striking, the subject of today's class, is a very personal experience. No one can question it. It's your experience. But let's try and understand some aspects of this. In all religions, essentially, what is being taught in one way or another is, I want you to be a better person today than you were yesterday. But what does that mean? What does it mean to be a better person? It means to treat other people better than you did today. To be aware of their needs more than your own.
All religions
essentially teach that in different ways. Maybe I should say all Western religions, because I'm not that familiar with all of the Eastern religions.
Okay.
But essentially all religions.
When you say Western, you're talking about Christianity and Islam?
Islam, Christianity, Zoroastrianism. There's many, many others that people don't think of as modern-day religion. Even voodoo, which is a corruption of a pagan religion with Christianity. Even that teaches the same idea.
Pagan religion.
And in all these religions, they all say, do not pay attention to astrology. And the reason is, astrology is sending you energy. The influence of the stars and the planets are giving you energy. They're causing you to do things. For example, we all know that the moon's gravity affects the tide. I'd appreciate it if you would mute your phones by pressing *6. Because that stops the static I'm receiving. You can always ask questions by pressing *6 again. Thank you. So the astrological influences have a purpose. They move you to a location at a certain time, a certain place, and the people that you meet at that time and that place, you have a reaction to. You have something to say to them or something to hear from them or some aspect of correction. That's why you're in that place. There's never a coincidence to why people are there also. But the religions tell us, don't worry about the astrology because you have free choice. And astrological determinism says you don't have free choice. And Judaism, Kabbalah, uses Hebrew astrology very much. And Hebrew astrology is a science. It's not the horoscopes in the paper every day. It's a science. But it's not a science that is going to be divulged to you to take away your free choice. And we need to understand how we have free choice, and yet astrology works. It's something that is inconsistent. If I have free choice, then the astrology shouldn't work on me. And if I don't have free choice, everything is predetermined and everything is known, then why should I bother to be a better person today than I was yesterday? why should I make that effort? We need to reconcile these two concepts in order to understand what Hashem wants from us and what he tells us in the Torah. In the Torah, there are 12 tribes of Israel. In the Torah, there is information about how the tribes marched in the desert. And coincidentally, and I'm joking when I say a coincidence, coincidentally, the 12 tribes relate directly to the 12 signs of the zodiac, or actually the 13 signs of the zodiac, which is beginning to be, people are being made aware of, which I'll explain in a little bit. But let's understand, how do we reconcile these two aspects of predeterminism and free choice? The problem is, when you read the Torah literally, you limit your mind, you limit your access to truth. Because there are 70 ways to understand each aspect that's taught in the Torah. Each verse, each word, each letter. There's 70 ways to understand it. So if we say, this is the literal meaning, this is the metaphorical meaning, we're leaving out 68 other ways. And here is the metaphor that the Kabbalists have given us in the modern age to understand how we reconcile predeterminism with free choice. We're all familiar with the cineplex, multi-splenic cineplexes that have been built in the last 5 or 10 years. There might be 4 movie screens in each one. There might be 10. There might be 16. I even heard about one that had 32 movies playing at the same time in the movie theater, in the same building. You pay your money, you walk in, and you walk down the hallway. And as you walk down the hallway, you can pick this movie or that movie. Now, the companies like to know which movie you're going to pick, so they make you pay the ticket at the beginning as you walk in. But the metaphor we're talking about is not 16 or 32 movie theaters. It's trillions of movie theaters. And they're all playing the same movie with some differences. They're playing the movie of your life. From the time you're born until you die, that movie. So in one movie, you might marry this person. And in another movie, you don't get married. And in another movie, you have 15 kids. And in another movie, you don't have any kids. And all of the possibilities that exist based on the decisions that you make. So if you take a breath or you hold your breath, those are two different movies. If you decide to go shopping to the market right now, or listen to this class, those are two different movies. The possibilities of the movies are endless. When I said trillions, I really mean endless. Because every moment of every day, we make a different decision. What, once we walk down that corridor and we pick a movie that we are living in, We have no free choice in that movie. That movie has been written, directed, produced, and is playing on the screen. It's not going to change. That's a predetermined movie of your life. There's no option to change that particular movie. But at every point in that movie where you see a decision possibility, you have free choice. But the free choice is to stop your reaction. Because the movie that you see, it isn't you playing outside with your friends as a 3-year-old or a 5-year-old or a 14-year-old. That movie is all of the different decisions that you make each and every instant. And if you experience stimulus, somebody says something to you, somebody suggested you go to college at this location, somebody sent you to a private school or a public school, all of these different decisions that affect your life, the movie is playing. Those stimuluses, you have a reaction to. Always have a reaction. Human beings are created to have reactions. When we have these reactions, we have a choice to follow that reaction or to stop that reaction. If you follow the reaction, the movie you are watching plays out. It just continues. Pre-written, pre-produced, no possibility of change. But if you stop your reaction, you move out of that movie theater automatically and further down the road, down the aisle, to another movie of your life. This sounds a little bit impossible, but it's not. Let's take the modern science idea of time travel. Albert Einstein said, time has to run forward. It can't run backwards. And we'll find out in a few weeks that through Teshuvah, time can run backwards. And that we have no need, no understanding of the impossibility of time travel. But let's just talk about what modern science says about time travel. Not only does it run forward, but they talk about a grandfather paradox, which is my grandparents met and they had my mother and my father. And my mother and my father met and they had me. And now if I go back in time, so before my grandfather and grandmother married, I could stop that marriage. And if I stopped that marriage, my parents never got born, they never met, and I never got produced. This is what's called the grandfather paradox. But it's totally false. Because I can go back in time in another movie and stop my parents, my grandparents from meeting. So in that movie, I don't exist. But the other 7.5 billion human beings do exist. Because while I'm describing the movie describing me, God, every moment we are taught, God produces, reproduces, recreates the world. what he's really doing is balancing all of the individual human decisions and changing the world to reflect those decisions, so that the movie that each of us are watching is the movie of the world at this moment. With this metaphorical understanding, we can now talk about this tool called binding by striking. Because the striking is to stop your reactions. What does that do? It binds you into the hallway to a better movie. Binding by striking is how you unify with different people. Binding by striking is how you change your character traits. Binding by striking is how you become a better person today than you were yesterday. Let's understand this whole concept on a more specific level. And I'm going to use the metaphor of somebody working at a desk at their job. And in approaches the supervisor, the boss, and he starts screaming at you because he's saying in his screaming that you can't really understand. He's saying you did this horrible thing to their business, to your business, to their business. You really screwed up. Something went wrong. Now, most people don't do those things purposely. It's a mistake. But when he starts screaming at you and you begin to understand what he's screaming about, you could have a movie that's playing, wait a second, I didn't do that. Or you could be playing in a movie where you did do it. Now, what is your reaction to that stimulus going to be? Some people want to dive under the desk and hide from the mistake that they made, hide from being yelled at, running away from the confrontation. Other people want the confrontation. They want to stand up and yell back at the supervisor. Others just want to sit there and take it and hide inside of themselves from their coworkers who are laughing and snickering around them for the silly mistake they made and having to endure this screaming match. And other people have a totally different reaction. They're concerned with what the other coworkers are thinking, not what the supervisor is saying. Other people want to please the supervisor. So how do I get him to calm down? Everybody has different thoughts, different reactions to the same stimulus. A more clear example might be when you're in the store and you see a two-year-old throwing a tantrum, and the mother or the father is busy trying to get the child to stop. What are they thinking while they try and get the child to stop?
If you're embarrassed.
They could be embarrassed that my child is such a misbehaving child. Or they could be concerned about, I have to teach this child so it doesn't ever happen again. But what is the difference between those two ideas? One is I'm embarrassed of what other people think of me. That's a desire to receive for oneself alone. the idea that I have to change this child so it never happens again for them, because they have to live in our society and they can't throw tantrums as a 20-year-old or a 40-year-old or a 80-year-old. And there are people 80 years old still throwing tantrums. Well, so what is the point of all of this discussion? We have to do the first step of binding by striking all the time, which is to stop your reaction. Not to suppress your reaction. There's a big difference between suppressing your reaction and stopping your reaction. Suppressing your reaction, an example would be I get angry and I calm myself down. But you haven't changed your consciousness. You're going to get angry again. What you have done is suppress the anger. And what happens, as we all know, people take the suppression and it harms them later on. It irritates them. It grizzes them. It grows within them until it bursts forth at the wrong time. I'm not talking about suppressing your reaction. I'm talking about stopping it. Stopping it is to pause. Stopping your reaction takes you a moment to think through, why am I acting this way? Why am I reacting this way? So we come to our first corollary. A reaction is by definition selfish. It can never be anything but selfish. Now, a lot of students, when they first hear that statement, don't agree with me. And that's okay. Remember, never believe anything I say, but practice what I suggest. So you may think and say to yourself, well, I am truly a spiritual person. I am truly always sharing. I'm never thinking of myself. And you are going to be lying to yourself. But that's the human way. Because we don't want to face these ugly truths about ourselves. But what do? When you stop your reaction, you have an internal conversation. This is step two of the binding by striking tools. And there are four steps to this tool. And it's a lifetime learning tool because it's going to teach you about yourself, not about your psychological self or your mental self or your emotional self or your physical self. It's going to teach you your spiritual self. Because your reaction is programmed into that movie. And that came through the astrological influences on your upper self, your higher self, that isn't in your body but is connected to your soul. And that higher self takes this information from the stars and from the planets and says, in this situation, react this way. That is always a selfish reaction. Does it make sense that your higher self wants you to act selfishly? And the answer is yes. Because the only way you can stop acting selfishly is to bring this unconscious reason to react down to the level of your conscious, where you can change that consciousness. your higher self wants you to reveal more of your unconscious and make it conscious. And this is the meaning of spiritual expanded consciousness. You've heard all the druggies in the last 50, 80 years talk about the highs that they get because they're trying to expand their consciousness. They're trying to experience that higher self. And the way you expand your spiritual consciousness is by having a conversation internally in your mind where you stop your reaction, which is step one, and you ask your higher self, why did you have me react that way? And you will get an answer. That answer is the still small voice within you that's coming from Hashem through your higher self. It's teaching you about yourself. What is your motivation for these various reactive behaviors? You've heard psychologists say, you get divorced, you're going to remarry the same person over again unless you change. And you do. You always remarry the same person. Why? Because you haven't changed yourself. Now, change comes about through two paths. One is called the path of pain and suffering. And we all know that path very well, unfortunately. But the other path is called the path of Torah. It's a path of speaking within yourself to understand yourself. Not because you went to a therapist and he listened to you, but because you're speaking within yourself. You ask the question, why did I react the way I reacted? And your higher self is going to answer you, but not with the truth, with a lie. But that lie has a hint to a next question. And as long as you keep that conversation going, you're going to eventually arrive at a place within yourself where you are comfortable saying, for today, I have gone deep enough. For today, I'm ready to change who I am. That reactive nature is always selfish. It has to be changed. In step two, I find out what is the cause of that reactive nature. What emotion was hurt? What lack did I have when I grew up that is now coming out in this reactive behavior? Whatever the reason is, when I have gone deep enough for today, because you must realize 10 years from now, that same reaction will take place unless you've changed yourself. But even so, there's always a deeper motivation, a deeper level. You will never get to the source, but you keep striving to get to the source.
To
the source of the reaction.
That for today, I will.
Today, I've gone deep enough for today. Now let's change the information I've received from selfish behavior to sharing behavior. And let's understand what those motivations are.
Okay.
in my unconscious level, I had a reactive behavior. But I've rationalized it in my unconscious mind. But I now brought it to a level, it's now conscious. My reactive behavior is based on a fear of some kind. A fear of loneliness. A fear of abandonment. A fear of fear. Whatever the motion is, whatever the conscious level is, there's a mixture of consciousness. There's a mixture of selfishness mixed with sharing. So when I mentioned before that the person who says, I'm really a spiritual sharing person, I never want to hurt anybody. I never do it consciously. That mixture, that feeling that I'm a sharing person is a mixture. And the metaphor that I use is when you weigh produce on the scale in the market, you put it on the scale, and the scale reads 1 pound, 2 pounds, 3 pounds. Think of that scale in the sense of 100% sharing. Or 0% sharing. So your reaction is 0% sharing. But when it gets to your conscious mind, it's 30% sharing. But now you want to get it to 60% sharing, or 90% sharing, or hopefully 100% sharing, but we're not there yet. As human beings, we just want to make a greater amount of sharing consciousness. Now, how do I do that? Let's take the example of the tantrum with the child. The action that both parents do, the one who is trying to help the child and the one who's being embarrassed, both of them, their reaction is to give a pachki to the tushy to wake the child up and say, stop this. But on one hand, the consciousness is selfish. They're concerned about themselves and being embarrassed. And on the other hand, it's a parent who wants to help the child. But the majority of human beings have that mixture. I'm concerned about being embarrassed, but I really want to help the child. Maybe it's 30% helping the child. Maybe it's 90% helping the child. Where are you on the scale? But you can always improve that scale. You can always have greater sharing. How do I do this? Oh, I'm going to speak to this child when I get home. I'm going to get them out of the tantrum now, get them calm, but when they're calm, I'm going to have a real talking to that one. Where in the scale of 0 to 100 is their sharing consciousness in that mindset?
Still angry.
No, you're not angry. If you're angry,
or worried about being embarrassed.
If you're still worried about being embarrassed, but then you're going to start to change the percentage of feeling about embarrassment and raise the percentage of helping the child. What am I really saying to you all? That there is no physical action without a thought. There is no physical action without a consciousness. And that consciousness is called Kavanah in Hebrew. That consciousness is Kavanah translation intention. What is my intention? To avoid embarrassment or to help the child? And I'm just giving you two different alternatives in this scenario. Every human being is different, and there's 100,000 different degrees between those two points.
What if that's to the person who's yelling at you, your employer?
Right. We're talking now about the employer yelling at you.
Right.
The same, the different metaphor.
Right. What is?
I'm embarrassed.
Yeah,
for my co-workers.
Because I'm embarrassed.
I'm embarrassed by the by. I'm ashamed by that my co-workers.
And they're watching.
Right. Or I'm saying, hey, he's right. I need to improve. I need to be a better employee. Oh, but he's yelling at me. I'm going to get angry because he's yelling at me. I can't hear him when he's yelling at me. That's another aspect. But we're not really talking about it. We're trying to simplify.
Why is this man or woman screaming? That's a reaction.
Yes. Your reaction to somebody screaming at you is to not listen. That's,
or at first to be like...
to be in shock.
Yeah.
All of these are reactions. And all reactions mean selfishness. And selfishness means, the boomerang law. What you do comes back to you. So if you do an action that has selfishness, you're going to have chaos in your life. If you do an action that has sharing, you're going to have positivity in your life. If we could always do 100% positive, 100% sharing, we would never have chaos. We would only have blessings. And all of those blessings would be miracles if we could control ourselves to that degree. But if we think about it, I'm saying sentences to you. The cow jumps over the moon. Is that a conscious thought? The word the starts in my throat. It started in my thought. It went to my throat. It came out of my mouth. But the other words after it are all robotic. The sentence flows directly from my thoughts, from my consciousness, to my throat and out of my mouth. There's that robotic idea is my unconscious, my higher self in control. And the whole universe is designed so that my unconscious will eventually become known to my conscious. And that's the whole world is about expanding our consciousness, of learning to be a better person today than I was yesterday, so that I can move down the hallway of potential movies to that level called Mashiach. That level in my movie where Mashiach manifests in my life.
Would that be no reaction?
Absolutely not. You will have a reaction. You just have to change the consciousness. We haven't finished the four steps yet. Okay. Step one is to stop your reaction. Step two is to have the internal conversation to understand why you reacted. And when you understand why, you have to face the fact that you really are a selfish, ugly person. But now you have step three, which lets you transform that ugly person into a beautiful sharing person by changing your kavanah, changing your consciousness of why you do what you do. And step four, the final step, is to do something. It doesn't matter what you do. You can do exactly the same action that was your reactive action. Or you can do a totally different action. But if you have changed your consciousness to be sharing, that action combined with the sharing consciousness is positive. For example, on the questions and answers class last week, I was asked about what is holy anger. Anger is idol worship, but there is something called holy anger. And the example we use is a teacher who knows the only way he can get through to this student is to wake them up. And if he shocks them by going out of his normal nature of calmness into being ecstatically or excessively emotional by getting angry, and he shows that anger to the student, the student will wake up out of their patterns.
Change.
There are four steps. Hello?
Hello. Yes, may I make a comment? Well,
sure.
You know, I'm the one who asked you to give that example.
I know. It's the reason I brought it up, because I knew you were on the phone.
Okay. And I'm going to say this. Every time I followed the binding by striking, it always was selfishness. This time, though, and I guess it's still under selfishness, but it turned out that what I was finding was what was anger was arrogance. And so then that led me, you know, it's like another road to the selfishness. So it was like, oh.
It's another aspect of how do I be a better person today than I was yesterday. If I have less arrogance, you begin to understand yourself on different levels based on what is your reaction.
And mainly it was what I consider fighting something that I had fought with for 25 years, thinking that I was supposed to be the one to always be, I don't know, feeling whatever the situation was, that I had to be the one to correct it. And for me, it was learning that that was really arrogance, that it that was the source of the anger. So thank you.
You're welcome. Ultimately, there is no reason that I need to do anything for other people, except that when I do something for another person with no expectation of receiving anything back, I am godlike. I am acting like God at that moment. God only shares goodness. God doesn't share evil. God doesn't share pain. All of the pain in the world is coming from our own actions of selfishness. That's the boomerang law. And it's 100% perfect. If I have 100% selfishness, I'm going to get 100% chaos in return. I'm not necessarily going to get it the next instant. It could be next lifetime. But it's going to come back to me. And in a few weeks, 2 weeks, we'll discuss teshuva, which is a way of eliminating that. But essentially, if I don't ever do teshuvah, every negative action, and a negative action is defined as the desire to receive for oneself alone, attached to the action that I do in the physical world. With that in mind, how do I become a better person today than yesterday? By stopping my reactions. Step one. Understanding why I reacted the way I did. What is the lack that I'm feeling that causes me to act that way? Three, once I understand that cause, knowing that there's always a deeper level, but I'm satisfied with where I am in the analysis today, changing that from selfish to sharing, even if it's just 1 degree more of sharing, it's that much less chaos in my life. Because every action is returned to me.
Action I've done is returned to you.
Every action I've done in the past and every action that I do right now will be returned to me. The boomerang law is constant. What I do, it's the law of in physics, equal and opposite reactions. A force is always pushed back against. But that the idea of these four steps, because once I understand, oh, I'm going to be a sharing guy, I have to do an action. It's not enough to think that I'm going to give all my money away right now. I have to do it. This is the world of Asiyah. The world of action. We have to do actions, but there's always a kavanah attached to the action, a consciousness attached to the action. So the same action can have different consciousnesses. How much of it is sharing and how much of it is selfish, that's what we are in control of. That is our free will. But we have to stop the reaction in order to choose a better movie. Because we don't really have any other free choice except to stop the reaction. We are always watching our life unfold in front of us. We're always watching the movie of our life. But we do have the consciousness, the free will, to stop the reaction. But we have to go through the four steps. It's not enough just to stop the consciousness. Excuse me, just to stop the reaction.
I understand that.
We have to go through the analysis. Why did I react this way? How do I change it to sharing? And then the fourth action. When I said, and I want to stress this, it does not matter what you do because the movies are all there. Which movie will you choose is based on step three. So don't think that it matters whether you give the kid a hit or you don't. What matters is why you gave them a hit or didn't give them a hit. What would be selfish? Some people, hitting somebody is selfish. And at the ultimate extreme, it's sadism, sadism.
Right. But it's definitely selfish.
But not always. I can hit somebody in order to teach them a lesson. I can hit someone because that's the only way I can shake them out of their reactive behavior. What is my consciousness?
To teach.
To teach. Okay, why do I teach? I could have a selfish reason for teaching.
Yeah.
I want authority. I want, you know, people to think highly of me. Or I could have a totally sharing consciousness to teach. You don't know what my consciousness is. And unless I stop my reactions, I won't know what my consciousness is. I have made this statement many times in the past, and students find it very difficult because we live in a society where the so much stress is on psychology. Kabbalah is a faster system to achieve the results than psychology is. How many people do we know have gone to therapists for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years? Kabbalah is going to change you the minute you stop the reaction and start the analysis. It won't accomplish the same thing that the breakthroughs over 15 years do in therapy, but it starts immediately, and it is a faster process. Again, never believe a word I say, but we're out of time, and the homework for tonight, for this week, and we will do class 6 next week, the homework this week is to practice binding by striking. And the class next week is mostly, there's some other items, but it's mostly about students sharing what they did and why they did it and what was that internal conversation and how did you change from one to the other, from selfishness to sharing. So does anybody have any questions?
I do.
Go ahead.
Okay. I can understand more about the baby having the tantrum and one's reaction. And I understand that of course, of the reaction of I'm ashamed, I'm embarrassed, I can't control my child, that's what people must be thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that as being totally selfish.
Right.
And then I understand how maybe picking up the child off the floor, carrying them outside, calming and, you know, and, well, with a baby, it would be hard to verbally. But just assuming.
Children at different ages need different aspects.
Exactly.
But,
exactly.
But let's, with your permission, I'm going to share an incident you've shared with me about your granddaughter.
Okay.
She goes to a new school, to a toddler school. She's 2 years old. And she's learned from your expressions, not that you taught it to her, because you say, Geyevek, go away, in Yiddish.
Yeah.
And the child walks into school, and she says, Geyevek. The teachers don't speak Yiddish, but they may have heard the words. They're in shock. Oh, how cute. Wait a second. Their reaction was, I'm being told to go away by this pisher?
Everybody can't stand what she said. I mean, they really, internally.
The reaction has to be, I'm not going to listen to this child.
They get really insecure.
Yes. All of these different reactions It's all related to it. Now, when you see it as the grandmother, when you hear it, the reaction might be being proud that she picked up initially. Okay, but then you start to think that, hey, this child is creating a conflict with other people. How do I get across to her? These are the processes that we need to go through to recognize, wait a second, I could be proud that this child, it's not healthy for her. It's not good for her. I can't be proud of this, but yet that is the reaction. Now, why did they want you to be reactive that way? I'm not going to go into the details, but you're going to have experiences this week. We all will have experiences this week of being reactive. And what we have to realize is it's good to start the process with one thing, one incident. It's not a good idea to try and change 42 things every second, because that's how many decisions and reactions you go through. And that's why Hebrew astrology is an exact science, because it takes into account all of those things. But of course, it takes a very skilled practitioner to make use of all of that knowledge. So does anybody have any questions?
I just want to say that I reacted by when the last time I heard this again and again, I reacted by saying, I think I should ignore the behavior.
Okay. As I said, if you made the change to being sharing, it doesn't matter what is your behavior. You ignore it, you discipline it, as long as your decision, as long as you're thinking about her. The best question you can ask in your internal conversation is, what is the best thing for that person? Have a beautiful evening, you all.
Thank you.
Thank you. Shalom.
Shalom.
Shalom. Shalom. Shalom.